Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Ed Vitagliano.
And welcome back to Today's Issues on this Wednesday, September 18th. Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman. I'm joined in studio by Walker Wildman, AFA Vice President of Operations, and now Steve Jordahl, reporter and news anchor for American Family News. We just had on, as you know, Glenn Stanton, who not only admitted to being a friend of yours.
Yeah, he did.
Which, you know, that's what
far
I would have
few
expected.
Between.
Yeah, he actually said he was president of your fan club.
President and only member.
Okay. All right. I see how that works.
Yeah.
Then. All right. Well, anyway, he spoke very highly of you and was a great guest.
So. Yeah.
All right. We are looking at the final 24 minutes of our program, and we look to you, Steve, to bring, I'm trying to think of a good metaphor, to bring the cows home.
You need a cowbell in order to do that.
No, well, let's not do the cowbell. I'm looking at, right at Brent Creeley. Do not ring that cowbell.
I think Brent's a dog fan, too.
There we go. Had to do it. That's the Trivia Friday cowbell. It's a Mississippi State thing, and I don't, as a Notre Dame fan, I've been in Mississippi. My wife is from Mississippi. We've been married since 81. We've lived in Mississippi since 85, with the exception of 1 year. And I just don't get involved in the Ole Miss, Mississippi State. You know, my daughter went to Ole Miss. My son is a Mississippi State fan. So I just don't get involved.
I've been to home games, football games of both. And it's hard for me to determine which is more annoying to me. Now, this has no reflection on the quality of the school or the teams. But having a cowbell rung in your ear for like 3 hours straight, or having that hotty toddy chant over and over and over at Ole Miss. SEC football.
I would advise you not to go.
Yeah, there you go.
Because you're going to get one of those home games. You're going to get an earful. So. All right, what do you got?
All right, I think I heard you guys referencing this before, but I wanted to play it. We're starting to see a little bit of a pushback from the press or the media in terms of the pushing back against the narrative of either the free-for-all stuff or the Trump is a racist stuff. And I've got two examples I want to play for you. The first is Senator Elizabeth Warren was on with Stephen Colbert Tuesday night. And he challenged her. Now, you will notice that this isn't a challenge to really hold her to the truth. He challenged her on the Medicare for All cost, whether it was going to raise the tax rate on middle-income people. She's refused to answer that because, of course, the answer is yes.
She's tap-danced around that.
Well, he kind of tried to call her out on it, but he did it because he had a better idea for how to present it. So he was really on her side, but at least he started with the challenge. This is cut nine.
You keep being asked in the debates, how are you going to pay for it? Are you going to raise the middle class taxes?
Right.
How are you going to pay for it? Are you going to raise the middle class taxes?
So here's how we're going to do this. Costs are going to go up for the wealthiest Americans, for big corporations.
Taxes, was it what you mean by cost?
Yeah. Okay. And hard-working middle-class families are going to see their costs go down.
But will their taxes go up?
Well, but here's the thing.
Here's the thing. I've listened to these answers a few times before, and I just want to make a parallel suggestion for you about how you might defend the taxes that perhaps you're not mentioning in your sentence. Isn't Medicare for All like public school?
So, you know, actually,
there might be taxes for it, but you certainly save a lot of money on sending your kids to school. And do you want to live in a world where kids aren't educated? Do you want to live in a world where your fellow citizens are dying, even if it costs a little bit of money?
So you see, he was trying to give her a way out of that, but he did kind of point out that she's really, yes, taxes on the middle class and probably lower income, unless you just don't pay any taxes at all, which are a large portion.
He just bailed her out.
I know he did.
That was lousy.
That was the point. He wasn't being a journalist.
He was doing good. I was liking him.
Yeah.
When he was actually trying to get her to answer the question, and then he just saw a rabbit or something.
No,
he planned. He
from the
planned
beginning.
This
planned to bail
because
her out.
He wants Medicare for All,
And he doesn't care. Stephen Colbert doesn't care if taxes go up for your average middle-class family because he's not middle-class.
Yeah.
So he wants to give her the ammunition
yeah.
to defend her position. I got to say, that to Walker's point, that first half of that,
yeah.
he really tried to pin her down, and her sidestepping was clear.
Yeah.
I just don't know how she thinks she can get away with this all the way to the Democratic National Convention. How does she think she's going to get away with saying what is now clear because she won't say yes or no?
Yeah. Because every time she asks, she sidesteps and says, well, costs are going to go down and lives are going to be saved.
Yeah, but you can only do that so long. You can do it in the primary as long as you go on the left-wing propaganda media outlets where y'all share the questions before you go on. But when you get in the general and you go on a debate stage and there's Trump and Trump's there.
He's not going to let her off.
No, she's going to have to answer that one.
And I'll say one other thing, too. Again, what you're talking about, Walker, even during the primaries, a lot of these Democrats, probably the majority of them, agree with her. They need some sort. They all are pushing, with the exception maybe of Biden, I don't know, all looking at some sort of single-payer kind of system. Mm-hmm. And so they don't care if everyone loses their private insurance, like Kamala Harris, I think, is pushing. And if middle-class taxes go up to fund Medicaid, is it Medicaid or Medicare for All?
Medicare for all.
Or some other version of it. They don't care. So you are going to get off a little bit more lightly in the primaries, but you won't in the general.
Maybe that's the goal, is to get through the primaries without answering the question and then come up with some kind of numbers afterwards. And
yeah. That's typically what happens is candidates go to their respective corners during the primaries to get their base, and then they come toward the middle. Although there's really not much of a middle for the Democrats to come to. If Joe Biden, and it looks like he's less and less relevant to the Democrat discussion as time goes on, if somebody else gets the nomination, there's no middle for them to come to. They have staked out positions that are clearly socialist, clearly so far left, you just can't come back from that.
Oh, coming for your guns, basically no border.
Right.
Free health care for illegal immigrants.
Free college, free no debt.
I mean, yeah, this is not something you can finesse with an explanation when you get to the general election. Well, what I meant was this particular tax over here, not that. No, these are positions, like you're saying, Steve, that are so far out of the mainstream, you're going to be locked in. You're going to have to defend it.
And here's the deal. Speaking financially, almost, and Walker, you might have better figures than I do, but almost every one of these proposals, whether it's free college, whether it's the $8,000 women's credit
Joe Biden was talking about.
Almost any of these would be billions, if not trillions, of dollars to implement the Green New Deal. Every one of these would bust the economy. If you had to put them all up, it would be just impossible.
Yeah, it would. You would have to increase at a minimum at the annual budget by billions to pay for it, and then you add that up over time, you're looking at trillions then.
That's real money.
Yeah, and you would have to print it because we don't have it like we do everything else. We just print it. But we're already printing too much as it is. Mm-hmm. You add a trillion on top of that a year, or $500 billion, that's I know everyone says that's unsustainable, and they laugh because we've been doing it for decades. But at some point, I mean, you just can't do that.
No.
And we're already in trouble as it is when it comes to printing money. But you add $500 billion a year on top of that, it's definitely not going to help.
And we're bringing it up with you because your dad would just kind of
there's a breaking point. He thinks you can just keep doing it. I guess you can. I don't know. We'll just have to – history will tell.
We'll find out. Yeah. Well, and here's the thing, Walker. It may not be me that finds out. It may be you that finds out.
Yeah, it'll be me. Kids. It'll be myself that doesn't get Social Security checks.
That's right.
So, that's right.
Well, I got a 401k.
I'll be in heaven going, oh, gee, that's a shame.
that's when
it all collapsed. Okay, well.
Another fallacy that we've been hearing over and over from the left is that President Trump is a racist. They all want to quote the Mexicans or murderers and rapists, and the Muslim ban and all this kind of stuff. A remarkable thing happened on CNN, of all places, last night, when a contributor named Steve Cortez got into it with Chris Cuomo about Trump and his support from the Latino
Chris
community.
Chris Cuomo, CNN, liberal anchor. Liberal guy.
Yeah. So I want you to hear this. This is Cut 10.
How can the Latino community believe that he loves them when he has said so many anti-Mexican and even anti-Puerto Rican things? How can he love Latinos? He's shown such animosity. What matters is the deliverables, is making their lives better. And in that score, the security and the prosperity of Hispanic Americans, of all Americans, but particularly Hispanics, since that's what we're focused on here, this president has simply been an amazing leader for Hispanics. You know it's Look, reflected in his numbers. He's got a third of them at best. How do you think you get to a majority? By the way, but a third of them, let's put that in context. A third of them is incredible, Chris, compared to expectations.
As somebody who says bigoted things about him all the time, maybe.
No, he does not say bigoted. Look, that is not true.
Really?
That is fake news for you to say that he says bigoted things.
Stop
he
does that not. You know, talk.
No,
it's not fake news. The guy denigrates him on a regular basis.
You know,
just because you're his echo doesn't mean that you say everything he says.
No, I'm not his echo. And that's unfair. And I'm offended that you would say that about me. I'm not his echo. I disagree with him.
Thank you.
When? Apology accepted.
You know, I'm going to say something here that's because Chris Cuomo is a lefty. Okay, sometimes I like him. I think sometimes he tries to be fair. Don't stone me, because a lot of times
send your letters too.
But at least he apologized, which he should have. So
it was a half-hearted apology. Sorry,
Steve.
I
am insulted. I'm insulted that you said it was half-hearted.
I think it's fake news.
man, I'll tell you what. Well, you're just a bigot.
Yeah, that's me.
No, all I know is that's an untrue narrative to keep painting President Trump as the hater of Mexicans and Puerto Ricans. We gave them like $90 billion last year. Because of the hurricane,
more than
Texas, North Carolina, Florida combined for
and
all
President
the hurricanes
Trump
last
was
year.
An advocate of that.
Yes, he was the one who signed the bill. So you know, to act like and then with Mexico, this is really more has to do with illegal immigration is where Cuomo's getting this that falsehood there. But just because President Trump and many of his voters don't like that Mexico's allowing illegal immigrants through their country into America, the fact that we don't like that doesn't mean that we hate Mexicans. It means that we don't like illegal immigration. And
as a policy and as the consequences that come with it.
Yeah, but the left loves to conflate the two. They love to to draw a long line connecting being against criminal illegal immigration to then you hate people.
Right. And it's repeated so often that it's hard for people out there that don't pay a whole lot of attention to avoid the impression. Mm-hmm. You shout something loud and long enough, people are going to believe it. And it's good that Steve Cortez was at least able to push back. I've got some good news for you guys.
No, there's no time for that.
No time for good news?
Go ahead.
This is research from the Guttmacher Institute, which is Planned Parenthood's very own research arm. They are by no means a unbiased source, but they have said in their numbers that the rate of abortions across the United States has plunged to its lowest levels since the procedure became legal in 1973. In the latest numbers they have from 2017, still 862,000 abortions, but down from 926,000 in 2014 and down from over a million in 2011. At the height, this was about 2000, I underlined this here, it was 1.6 million babies slaughtered in this country.
Mm. So that peak was in
1990?
1990.
Okay. And it has declined since. So good news. Yeah. Guttmacher is not about to credit some of these pro-life laws that are undoubtedly having an effect. In addition to that, the study says, and there's probably some validity to this too, women are having children at a later age, and they're just not having as many children.
Yeah,
right. So,
statistically, that's true. I will say, and this is not a study or research, but just generally speaking, I would give some credit to the pro-life movement. I think the education that Christians have done, educating the public about the dangers of abortion and the tragedy that it is, I think that's had some effect. How much, we just won't really know. It's hard to draw those connections. But I think it's had some positive effect.
And also, as you alluded to, Steve, the pro-life laws that kind of ate around the edges mm-hmm. of the absolute right to abortion that came through Supreme Court decisions, like parental consent laws, 24-hour waiting periods, you know, laws that require that you show a woman an ultrasound of the baby before. Those kinds of things, I would have to say, absolutely have caused part of that decline. But there are demographic trends that probably helped have led to that as well. I would also say this one other thing that we didn't talk about this in our story meeting, so I know you didn't get a chance to look this up. But I would also say that over the last 10 or 15 years, however long it's been, with so many Hispanics coming into the country, legal and illegal, they generally, at least my interpretation of it is, are more pro-life.
Yes.
They may be more socialist in their economic beliefs because they come from socialist countries, but they are more pro-life.
Right.
So that may have also contributed to...
I think the only other factor that I would bring into this for bringing things down that hasn't been mentioned yet is the rise of technology. What we're seeing from, and science, what we're seeing from 3D and 4D ultrasounds,
right,
and what the research is showing about fetal pain, those I think are having a huge effect on the perception that abortion is just a blob of tissue or whatever the argument was. I think technology is on our side.
Well, and you can't... just as one last point, and we can move on. But this would be very difficult to pinpoint as to what exactly the reasons are, the contributing factors. We can just guess, because it would be impossible logically to go and ask women who didn't get pregnant why you didn't have an abortion. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Mm-hmm. So you just have to use logic to try to figure out what might have mitigated and lowered the old trends. 1.6 million a year, the peak at 1990. That's horrifying.
It is. I was listening last night to Abe, the Hamilton Corner, or Abe's show, and man, he is so passionate about
this. Yes, he is.
And he brought up some horrifying truths about the but. I tell you, if anybody wants to get an insight into the horrors and a good Christian biblical thinking about this, just look up the podcast, because he was fantastic.
Yeah. Okay.
I wanted a couple minutes left. I want to bring up a new think. That's not a new think tank, but a new study that's out. This is from the Competitive Enterprise Institute. They put together a lengthy 31 pages of examples of apocalyptic predictions dating back decades of climate change.
I saw this
that did
awesome.
Not come to pass. All right, so I did bring in a couple of these, and this is starting long, long ago. This is a LA Times article from 67, and they predicted dire famine by 1975. In 1970, they said by the year 2000, there was going to be an ice age. The New York Times from 1969, foe of pollution sees lack of time. The trouble with almost all environmental problems is that by the time we have enough evidence, people are dead. And it goes on. The more recent ones that I pulled just... grabbed a couple from this, but do you remember that in 2013 in The Guardian, they said that the Arctic was going to be ice-free in 2 years? That would be 2015. It was not. The U.S. Navy predicted an ice-free Arctic by 2016.
By the way, the actual amount of ice increased for a while following those predictions, and I think the melting has... increased, but it actually increased in the follow-up of those predictions.
Yeah, right. It's cyclical. It goes up and down. And then finally, from 2014, French foreign minister said that they only had 500 days to avoid climate chaos. Now, of course, according to Ocasio-Cortez, we have 11 years. So they got to get their stuff together. They're not quite on the same page on all this.
Right.
It just
I saw in connection with that article, I saw a kind of a flashback to 2008, an ABC News program on climate change.
Yeah.
I think back then it was called Global Warming.
Right.
They actually showed video of New York City and how it would be underwater by, I think, I don't know whether it was 2015 or what. But anyway, it was all a parade of horrors of what would come when this theory.
They probably just used clips from the movie The Day After, which was kind of an interesting, fun movie, but lacking in fact.
Kind of like alien invasion movies.
Exactly.
It's good for popcorn.
Exactly. All right, last thing, and I wanted to bring this up. I went to seminary. Ed, you went to seminary.
I did not. I went to
Bible college?
Bible college.
Okay. Still, a lot of good things happening at Christian colleges and seminaries. We train our pastors there, but there are some you want to avoid. One of them that you want to avoid if you're thinking of going into ministry is Union Seminary in New York City. For a long time, it has been way off as far as anything.
A leftist wasteland.
It has been. And I don't know who they're supplying pastors to, but don't even darken the door of one of those churches. You're going to get an earful. I just wanted, they put a tweet out that came out today. This is talking about yesterday, along with a picture. And this is the tweet. Today in chapel, we confessed to plants. Together we held our grief, joy, regret, hope, guilt, and sorrow in prayer, offering them to the beings who sustain us, but whose gift we too often fail to honor. What do you confess to the plants in your life? Yes, folks, P-L-A-N-T-S, green hibiscus and those. And the picture is of some seminary, poor seminary person that's being deceived, talking to a bunch of plants. And this confessing.
And this is in the chapel.
This is in their, yes, in, so their, this, in this, their seminaries. I don't know if they have a chapel.
This human being who was created, according to Genesis 1, to have dominion over the earth and subdue it.
Yes.
Is on his knees confessing his sins to plants.
I don't know if it's him or her, but yes. And there are several others waiting in line to do the same thing.
I didn't mean to judge the person's gender.
Well, maybe I don't know what they identify as. So.
Yeah, you just never know.
Well, I'll tell you what I confess to plants, certain plants anyway.
Get out of my yard!
No,
get
like,
off of my lawn!
Like corn on the cob, I love to eat you with butter. Okra, I don't like you whether you're boiled or fried.
Oh, I love fried okra.
So I confess things to plants all the time.
Okay, yeah. Good for you.
This is pathetic. This is pathetic.
Yeah, it really is.
Bizarro.
If
that's a word, is bizarro? I know some people say it's bizarro world.
I think it's a kind of a...
Bizarro world is actually a cartoon.
We know for sure it's bizarre.
It is bizarre.
That is a word.
Yeah, and it's what's the theological bent where everything is God? We're all kind
pantheism.
Of, pantheism. Thank you.
Yes,
it's profoundly pantheistic.
Well, first of all, I got news for those seminary students. The plants can't hear you. They don't understand what you're saying.
They offer forgiveness.
This is meant to make you feel first guilty, and then feel good after you confess. So. Basically, it's good for nothing.
What do you do if you've confessed to the plants and then you need to go out to lunch? Do you then eat cow?
You eat a burger. Yeah.
Apologize to him. I don't know.
No,
that's just weird. You can't even eat veggie
tomatoes.
Burgers.
No, nothing on there.
All right, folks. More great programming directly ahead on American Family Radio. See you tomorrow.